Hello and welcome to Mysterious Universe Plus Season 2, Episode 10. I'm Benjamin Grundy. Joining me is Aaron Wright.
Great show coming up. We've got cryptids from the west, we've got aliens from the east, and a little bit of banana in between.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't think you want to know. Just wait till the end of the show.
First up for this Plus show, UFOs captured by Texas trail cam. This is on Micah's blog at graylianreport.com. And there's a bit of video to go with it. It's on Fort Worth area resident Lisa Brock Pikarski. She's a little bit freaked out about images she discovered on an infrared camera mounted at her family's favorite hunting spot. This was pretty impressive, actually, this video.
Yeah, she seemed really genuine, and the video seems to be pretty convincing. Immediately when I saw the video, and of course, hop onto the show notes at mysteriousuniverse.org and we'll link to this, you've got to have a look, because it shows that classic image of almost like a saucer-shaped UFO with a ring of lights around the outside of it, just hovering in the background.
Yeah, let's take a listen to the report.
What I see almost looks like a frisbee.
She says the top left portion of the picture shows something hovering in the night sky above her Archer City ranch.
You see several lights going around, and they're all symmetrical, lit up, and it just looks like an object in the sky.
Timestamps on the photos show the object hanging in the sky for almost 2 hours. By the early morning, it was gone.
So as you said, the image in the trail camera was really impressive. It almost looks like portholes on a disc, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very peculiar. And the interesting thing about this was is that a lot of people have come out and said, oh no, it's just a string of LED lights. Like, hang on, why would there be a string of LED lights out in the field somewhere?
One good suggestion I heard was maybe dew on a spider's web. And it had been in front of the camera.
Okay.
Maybe.
Maybe, but no, I don't think
in
so.
In a perfectly straight line.
Yeah,
though,
in a perfect perpendicular line.
The thing is, and Micah pointed this out on Graylian Report, if you look at the stills stretched over that near 2 hour period, it actually moves.
Right.
It drifts across the sky from left to right in the image.
Okay.
So Micah questions, you know, if it is, you know, LED lights or a spider's web, how is it moving
drifting
across the sky?
Well, on top of that also is that some people said that it was like droplets of water that were coming down the lens.
Right.
And that it was reflecting light from the distance. Like that, it can't be that. Why do people have to debunk things so ridiculously? I mean, come up with a decent debunking.
Well, to many people, the whole UFO idea is ridiculous. But this comes back to what we were discussing on the free show, is like, where are all the UFO photos? And how many of them do we toss away every week?
Yeah, it's true.
You know, we don't cover them on the show because they're a visual thing, so it's hard for us to, you know, really talk about
until we start doing video.
Yeah, that'll be fun. We'll have lots of stuff to cover. Next up, we wanted to give you guys a shout out on a new book coming out. This is from Cryptomundo.com, Monsters of New Jersey. It's being published by Stackpole Books, and it's written by Loren Coleman and Bruce G. Hallenbach. It's officially out on September the 1st, but you can pick it up now if you're crafty. We'll link to it in the show notes. And they've gone through and listed some of the classic bizarre beasts seen in the New Jersey area.
The cover is enough to make you want to go out and buy this book. It's really cool.
It's got like this weird winged minotaur on the front. It's very cool. And they've got a list of the table of contents, because of course we're going to have the Jersey Devil in there, winged wonders, the Hoboken Monkey Man.
The Hoboken Monkey Man.
Yeah, Cape May Sea Serpent. Very cool stuff in there. So we went through the table of contents and picked out some of the ones that piqued our interest. Did you have one there?
Well, yes, I do. And as you said, the Jersey Devil is mentioned in this book. And I think, is that what's on the cover? Is that minotaur thing, the Jersey Devil?
Yeah, it's the Jersey Devil.
Right. Okay. I've heard about the Jersey Devil plenty of times, but I've never really paid any attention to it because
You've never read the accounts into the story.
Yeah, because it's been done over and over that you kind of go, oh, yeah.
It's it's an old one.
Yeah. Well, he actually writes just a small couple of paragraphs on the origins of the Jersey Devil, and it's really intriguing. He writes that the most frequently related account of the devil's origins goes like this. He says that in 1735, a Mrs. Leeds of Eastville, New Jersey, upon finding that she was pregnant for the 13th time and less than exhilarated about it, snorted that if she was going to have another child, it just might as well be the devil. And it was. It was born with an animal's head, a bird's body, and cloven hooves instead of feet. Cursing its mother, it could speak at birth, of course, it promptly flew up the chimney and took residence in the swamps and pine barrens of the southern New Jersey area. It has lived there ever since.
I didn't realize the story was that old.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either. So it actually stops there because this is just inside the preview. So I'll have to pick up the book when it comes out and we'll do some more investigation into it.
Yeah, one of the other chapters was Big Red Eye. So I did a bit of research on him, and apparently he's been prowling about since the turn of the century.
Who is he?
Sounds like a Bigfoot character.
Right.
I got this from weirdnewjersey.com, and they wrote there were more than 50 sightings of Bigfoot in the 70s, and these were all in Sussex County alone. And in 1977, over a period of 2 weeks beginning in late May, these strange moaning sounds filled the night.
Moaning?
Yeah, they said it always started around 2 a.m. and went on till almost dawn. The wailing noises were almost constant throughout the night, and they lasted for hours. It was like some kind of huge primate making these noises. The witness said it woke me up out of a sound sleep. I had the windows open so I could hear it really well, but I couldn't tell which direction it was coming from. I think it was coming from the direction of Route 284. It was a terrible moaning, like something out of a horror movie, and it was so intense, it just seemed to go right through you. It made the hair on the back of my neck stand straight up and my eyes water. The witness, J.D. Grant, said he called his friends to see if they could hear it at their house, which is about a quarter of a mile away. He recalls that it went on for such a long time, like an hour. It was horrible, just horrible. A blood-curdling, wailing sound. I've never heard anything like it. He said, I've heard coyotes, bears, and fox, and it wasn't like anything. It was this low, guttural sound. It went right through you. Now, he says, upon hearing the noise, I did some investigating with the help of my brother, and found the BFRO website had quite a selection of Bigfoot vocalizations. And we've heard those on the show before and played them in season one.
Well, I was going to ask you that. Yeah, is this a recounting of that incident? But it's actually in a separate location, isn't it? Because those ones were in Western Virginia.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of Bigfoot recordings. I don't think they have any of this particular event.
Haunting sounds, though, when you hear them. Like, that's really unsettling. And actually, we did something recently. I can't remember if it was on a Plus show, but it was about the fact that this farming family somewhere, I think it was West Virginia as well, were experiencing the same sounds again.
That's right. And another witness to the night of the Bigfoot serenades was Chris. And he recalls that it was about 2:30 a.m. I just got home from work. I heard this low moaning noise, kind of a cry. It was hard to tell where it was coming from because there were a lot of wooded areas. It definitely wasn't a person. Anything that could make screams that loud definitely had to be big. The wailing went on for a long time. I stuck my head out the window to get a better listen, and I heard cop cars and boisterous conversation. What was said, I couldn't make out, but several shots were fired, then silence. The wailing did not start back up again that night, and there was no mention of any of it in the papers the next day. So this area of Sussex County has a lot of sightings, a lot of stories of Bigfoot, but they don't call him Bigfoot or Sasquatch. And the article actually says if you mention Bigfoot or Sasquatch to a local, they'll be like, I don't know. But if you mention Big Red Eye, they'll know what you're talking about.
Haven't we read accounts before of Bigfoot having red eyes?
Yeah, many times.
Yeah.
Of course, many times. The witness, Grant, actually recalls a night back in 1996 when a friend and he were walking along Layton Road after midnight when they encountered a creature nearing the side of the road. He said, I knew it wasn't a bear. It was too lean and upright. It was humanoid. It had been there the whole time watching us approach. There was no noise. It can't have been a bear, otherwise we would have heard something that big crashing through all the underbrush. It was tall and shaggy with red eyes. The eyes were glowing red from reflected light, not glowing like LED lights or something. It just stood there motionless, arms hanging limply at its sides. It had no bad intent, it was just creepy. Then of course we ran and did not look back. I don't care what anybody says, I know what I saw. That is something you don't forget.
Automatically, if you see something with red eyes, you automatically think it's evil. But he's saying there that he didn't really feel threatened. He was just obviously disturbed by the experience of it.
Yeah, and that keeps in line with most of the encounter stories with Sasquatch or Big Red Eye that we've heard before.
But they don't always have red eyes, do they? So do you think it's a different species? Like, what is going on here?
So the book again is Monsters of New Jersey, Mysterious Creatures in the Garden State. We'll link to it in the show notes at mysteriousuniverse.org if you want to pick it up. We have to have Lauren on the show.
Well, we do, yes.
We've got to get him on the show eventually. I've been a fan of his work for a long time, and you've got plenty of his books in your little library over there.
I do, yeah. I find his work to be fascinating. It's great.
We're going to take a quick break there. When we come back, we've got Japanese cryptids and the most isolated man on the planet. Stay with us.
Okay. Over to Phantoms and Monsters now. Of course, Lon's blog at naturalplane.blogspot.com. He's got his usual humanoid cryptid reports. However, this time he's got a whole selection of accounts from Japan. He's got some interesting ones, including the Kappa. Now, we've spoken about the Kappa on the show before, and the Kappa is allegedly a childlike creature that has like a bowl in its head, which is containing water. And if you can get it to bow and the water falls from its head, it disables it and stops it from dragging you into its watery grave, right?
It's one of those classic yokai that we've covered many times before, but the accounts are all from, you know, the 1700s, 1600s and earlier.
Right. We've never heard of accounts recently.
No, and then Lon's found a couple of modern accounts, which is really intriguing.
Well, we can't actually say for 100% that this is the Kappas, but this one is called Slimy Footprints, and it says around 11 p.m. on the 1st of August in 1984, in the town of Tsushima in the Nagasaki prefecture, a squid fisherman named Ryu Shirazaki was walking home from the local pier after work. As he passed near the Kuta River, he came upon a small group of children playing at the water's edge. While it was not entirely uncommon to encounter people fishing in the river at night, it was rather surprising to see youngsters there. Now, as he approached the children, he was struck by how bizarre they appeared in the moonlight. He could make out their swarthy faces, unusually spindly arms and legs, and glistening skin. Suspicious, he called out to them as he neared, but they seemed startled and quickly disappeared into the water. The next morning, when he returned to the same spot, he discovered a set of moist, teardrop-shaped footprints on the nearby pavement. The prints appeared to consist of a slimy substance that had begun to coagulate under the hot morning sun, and they stretched for about 20 metres. Each footprint measured about 10 inches long and 5 inches wide, and they were spaced about 50 to 60 centimetres apart. Now, Shirazaki and a few curious onlookers immediately suspected the footprints belonged to Kappa. People began to gather around as the news quickly spread throughout town, and all agreed the prints belonged to the Kappa. In the minds of many residents, the footprints confirmed the existence of the river imps, which they had known through local legends. Now, unfortunately, this ended quite boringly because police investigators were actually called to the scene to investigate it, and they took a sample of the substance, and it was definitely some type of unknown secretion. They couldn't work out what it was. However, the sample they took was too small, so they couldn't perform a proper forensic analysis on it.
Ah, the mystery was never solved.
That's right.
The next one's called The Unclean Guest. This is another recent Kappa encounter. It occurred on June the 30th, 1991, in the town of Saito in Miyazaki Prefecture. When an officer worker named Mitsugu Matsumoto and his wife Junku returned home for the evening. Now, upon opening the front door, the Matsumotos were confronted with a strange smell inside their home. Inside, they found dozens of small wet footprints around the front door and in the hallway, bathroom, and two tatami rooms. At first, they suspected a burglar, but they soon realized nothing had been stolen. The police briefly surveyed the house but found nothing except a floor soiled by 30 footprints, each measuring about 7 centimetres long and 6 centimetres wide and having 4 or 5 toes. To Matsumoto, the footprints did not look human, nor did they appear to belong to any animal he could imagine. Later that night, as Mrs. Matsumoto was putting laundry away, she discovered an unusual orange stain on some clothing. The next morning, as she inspected the house more closely, she discovered a deposit of orange liquid on the portable stereo in the tatami room. He took a sample to the local public health centre for analysis, and the results indicated the liquid had an extremely high iron content and a chemical composition resembling spring water. Troubled by the incident, Matsumoto decided to visit a shaman. After listening to Matsumoto's story, the shaman encouraged him not to worry, explaining that the Kappa were indigenous to the nearby swamp and enjoyed playing the occasional prank on local residents. The Kappa were harmless, the shaman told him. Now, he said they were harmless perhaps, but he found them extremely difficult to clean up after because they couldn't get rid of the orange stains.
How rude. They come into your house and they make a mess and just leave.
Reminds me of a story we'd heard. I think this was sent in by a listener who said every night they would hear tapping on their window.
Right.
Their bathroom window. And they would check and there'd be nothing there. Next night, tap, 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 tap. They'd check and there'd be nothing there. One evening they came home and the bathroom window had been opened. And they looked in the bathroom and there was just all these little footprints everywhere. Except the footprints had 3 toes and they were about the size of a child's.
Oh, like a demon?
Like some sort of Yeah.
Yeah, I get demon out of that.
Yeah, they thought it was some kind of imp or goblin that come right. in and taken a shower and just walked around the house.
It's funny how they say that, oh, no, don't worry about it. They're just mischievous and they just pull pranks on people. These kappas from the ancient legends would drag people to a watery death.
Yeah. Why do they think they're harmless?
No, they're harmless. Don't worry about it. Now, there's another couple of them here, but I just want to mention the last one. This one's called The Fanged Humanoid and it occurred in Kofu in February of 1975. Now, the encounter alleges that between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m, 2 7-year-old boys named Kono and Yamahata watched a luminous orange UFO approach Kofu, Japan, while making a ticking sound. It landed on 3 bull-shaped legs on a nearby vineyard. The object was a domed disc, 5 meters in diameter and 6 feet high. The boys got very close to it and discovered the surface of the object was silver-coloured and had strange characters embossed on its surface. A ladder extended out of the craft down to the ground and a humanoid creature, slightly over 4 feet tall, disembarked. It wore a silver uniform and carried something that looked like a gun. His skin was dark brown and he had large pointed ears, but his large head had no facial features, no eyes, mouth, no nose. It merely had wrinkles on its face and 3 silvery 2-inch-long fangs where the mouth should be. The boys could see one more smaller humanoid in the cockpit. The being that had emerged reached out and touched one of the boys, patting him twice on the shoulder and uttering words like a tape recorder running backwards. The boy that had been touched sat down, paralyzed either by the touch or fear, but his companion took him on his back and carried him from the vineyard. They then ran to one of the boys' homes and informed their parents, who could see at first the orange light pulsating in the vineyard. Then it disappeared as they watched. 2 concrete posts were found pushed over at the landing site.
An interesting close encounter from Japan.
Yeah, I wonder Japan was previously a closed nation, I think, until about the 1600s. But there's still a language barrier there. And I wonder how many of these encounters have happened that still don't get out to the Western world.
Well, the very first report Lon has in this article is one of those classic encounters. I think it's from the early 1800s.
Right.
We've covered it on the show plenty of times before. It's a woman that lands in a UFO. It's similar to this description. We'll link to that in the show notes, but yeah, you're right. I mean, there probably is a lot of stories that, you know, we haven't heard or they've been lost in translation.
But again, with the silver suits, do all these UFO races just get together and go, we're going to wear silver?
But these guys didn't have eyes. They just had wrinkles for a face.
And fangs.
Can you just have wrinkles for a face?
No plastic surgery in space. So a big thanks to Lon for hunting those down and getting those out there. I strongly recommend you log on to his site and have a look. And as Ben said, we'll link to that in the show notes. But thinking of the East and about these cryptid encounters and these encounters that don't get out, you've actually got a tale there from China, don't you?
Well, this is from your Field Guide to Demons and Fairies.
I love that book.
Fallen Angels and Other Subversive Spirits by Carol Mack and Dina Mack. And yeah, we managed to find one in here from China and it's on the mountain fairies. We've covered fairies on the show before and a couple of times on Plus episodes, and I love those old stories, but I'd never come across a specific one from China. I knew there was fairy lore in China, but nothing specific. But this chapter in the book gives a good rundown on the lore surrounding them in China. It writes that mountain fairies are dainty, beautiful, and irresistible. Popular tales abound of travelers to the mountain terrain who come upon a bevy of maidens and are invited to stay. Bed on hemp and quite blissful, they remain with the fairies for what feels like a short week. When they begin to grow bored with the vacation and ask to return home, the fairies usually release them readily. It is to their astonishment that these men find upon their return that families and relatives and neighbours have all long since become their ancestors. There is no more place for them in this worldly, time-worn plane. So up they go again to find their home with the spirits.
Wow, that's really amazing. That actually made me prick my ears up when I heard that, because that's Chinese folklore, right? But that's very much in line with all the European accounts we hear of
exactly the
sharing
same.
Hemp or sharing some type of substance and then losing all this time, but it only feels like a week. And they're really sinister creatures. And this sort of makes me think, because again, as I said before, that like this cross-cultural thing. All these cultures just can't be making this up, being such similar occurrences.
No, it's just like, oh, look at all our folklore. It all happens to be the same.
Yeah.
Well, mountain fairies are not usually malevolent and are included in this guide for their radical relationship to time as we know it. Just as mermaids pull their human lovers under without any real sensitivity to human need for oxygen, so does the fairy pull her lovers into her near eternal dimension without any regard to their lifespan. As long as they stay with her, they remain alive. Some say these enchanted human beings are actually dead but do not realize it. So China has numerous fairies in all of its mountains, they say. Some of these fairies are seen as Shen, spirits of nature, and they embody sunshine, clouds, rain, mist, and delicately imbue all these phenomena. So the book's got a couple of ancient tales here. The first one is from Wang Qi, who was a traveler in the mountains gathering firewood when he came upon a few old men playing chess. He apparently put down his axe and joined them. They gave him a stone to place in his mouth, and when he did, he lost all appetite and thirst, and so he played for a while. After some games, one of the other players said that perhaps it was time for Wang Qi to return home. He returned to get his axe, but it was only dust. He left and returned to his village to find that many, many centuries had passed, so he returned to the mountain and practiced Taoism until he himself became an immortal. One of the eight immortals named Zhang Guo had a white mule that he could fold up in his wallet and then take out and reactivate with a dab of spittle.
Oh, convenient.
It would transport him thousands of miles a day. Taoist wizards are able to conjure Shen or spirits and control them. They use the medicinal herbs of the mountain for longevity, rise above the clouds and become invisible or shapeshift into the form of a beast or insect, and after 700 years of life on Earth, ride to heaven on a dragon's back and rule spirits. If they become one of the immortals, they can fabricate banquets from thin air, magical wine is poured from an unending source, and fairies from the moon can be conjured for a song and dance and then turned back into a chopstick. They can visit the moon itself before the night is through, it said. Isn't that interesting how many crossovers we hear there between fairy lore we've heard before from the West?
Mm.
And also, you know, other things like tulpas come to mind when you're saying that the Taoist wizards can control spirits.
So, the conjuring of a...
Yeah, conjure Shen, right. Conjure spirits.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like a tulpa. And I love the fact that he has a mule in his wallet.
Yeah, isn't that so cool? It folds up.
He just like launches it and unfolds. And also the stories of transformation, the idea that the Taoist wizards could transform themselves into like a block of wood. And I don't know if you've ever played video games where all of a sudden the character, like especially Japanese games, the character will change into a puff of smoke and there'll just be a block of wood there.
No, I haven't.
Like, sometimes if the character's a ninja, all of a sudden there'll be a puff of smoke and then there'll be a block of wood. It's in like old Japanese games. It's like a pretty common cultural thing.
You turn into a block of wood.
Yeah, like you disappear and there's a block of wood in your place.
Right.
Right. And that actually comes from these old tales of Taoists who, when they were dead and buried, years later, if the coffin was dug up, there would just be a block of wood there. And it was said that they would take a block of wood and then they would cast some spell to make it look like their body so that their people and the family would bury it thinking it was them, but they had really left and gone off to the mountains or off into the fairy world.
Oh.
So it was like a decoy.
Oh, right. So the family can continue their mourning and do everything normally, whereas they can move on and feel at peace that their family thinks they're gone.
Right, right. Mm. And it's a way of, I guess, leaving the human world without, I don't know, disrupting people's...
Of course.
Grasp on reality.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So that little piece was, again, from A Field Guide to Demons, Fairies and Fallen Angels. And it is pretty incredible how all of this just links together.
Great, isn't it?
The chapter after that goes into the Persian tales, which are exactly the same. And then it goes into Greece, which, of course, we have tales of Pan and then in India. And so many links there.
And all the cultures have very similar or almost identical encounters, but different names, right?
Exactly. We're going to take a break there. When we come back, as we promised, the most isolated man on the planet. Welcome back. Next, we head to slatemagazine.com. There's an article by Monty Real. It's got an intriguing title, The Most Isolated Man on the Planet. And he's writing about a Brazilian Indian that Brazilian officials have concluded is the last survivor of an uncontacted tribe. And they've essentially declared this 31 square mile area off limits to everyone else. It's like his own sanctuary.
That's right. Yeah, because they don't want any more logging going in here. Because in Brazil, allegedly, if you can get cleared the land of anyone in there, including the indigenous population, the loggers are able to claim the land for themselves and then develop it or remove the land, or remove the trees from it.
I don't think that's law now. I think that was
previously. That's right.
In the 70s and 80s, and that's where a lot of these horror stories of massacres of tribes come from.
That's exactly right. And that's why we believe that he's been reduced to this one man. However, he's only in his 30s, allegedly. Well, that's what they think he is.
Yeah, well, this story is interesting because they've tried so many times to contact him. They know he's there. I know he's there, and he can go to Google Earth, and he can even find him
his
on
parcel of land.
Yeah, find his map on Google Earth. But every time they've tried to contact him, it's been so difficult because he's constantly moving and he's constantly trying to get away from the bulldozers, essentially.
Well, wouldn't you, though? Like, first of all, you haven't had any contact with other human beings apart from your tribe, obviously. Mm. And then all of a sudden, these people in modern clothing and these big bulldozers are coming in. You're automatically going to think, God, they're devils.
Yeah, well, they actually found out why he's moving as well. That's that natural fear, of course. But there was another reason, because every time he was moving, they were finding his campsite. And his campsite would have this peculiar hole underneath the tent, which was specific to that. They'd never seen that in an Amazon tribe before.
Right. It was like 4 or 5 feet wide, wasn't it? It was quite large.
Yeah, they couldn't figure out what this hole was for. But eventually, they found this bulldozed village of, I think it was about a dozen tents of a similar nature that had that hole. So, they concluded that in the past, the bulldozers had come through and just demolished his village. And this guy is the last survivor of this uncontacted tribe.
I wonder if they were building those holes, or he's building those holes to, in case the bulldozers come through and it goes over the top of him. I don't know. Like, it's just kind of a wild-eyed theory I'm putting out there.
I don't think so. It's probably for cooking or something.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, actually, I thought it was for a toilet, but they said that it's not used for that.
You wouldn't poo in your own tent.
No.
Why would you poo in your own tent?
Well, I don't know. Well, you know, you think you're going to dig a hole, whatever you go out. I don't know. Well, he's interesting because he actually is a naked man. He gets around naked. He's got a bow and arrow with him all the time. And there's only been a number of times that the officials have made contact with him. And
it's always been standoffs and, you know, very tense situations whenever they've actually come across him.
Right. And one overzealous official tried to push it just a little bit far and ended up with an arrow in his chest.
Yeah.
So, that's what you get. But they actually have been able to compile some pretty interesting information on him. They know that he mostly eats wild game, which he obviously hunts with his bow and arrow. He actually is able to build spiked pits with these traps, which have spikes in the bottom of them. He grows crops around his huts, including corn, and he often collects honey from hives of the stingless bees that have constructed these hives in trees near his little huts. Mm. So, he's obviously a man of the world, isn't he?
When they were first trying to contact him, they were trying to bring him in. I mean, if this guy is the last member of his tribe, they're trying to bring him into society to essentially rescue him. But the reason that they've created this wardened off area for him now is because they realize that that doesn't work.
No.
You can't just take someone that's been living a certain way, thrust them into modern society, and here you go, here's your green card, social security number, go get a job, off you go. That doesn't work. And there's some accounts in history of when this has gone bad. There's one actually on the lone woman from San Nicolas. It's an Indian woman from North America who was spotted by an otter hunter in 1853. She was completely alone on an island off the coast of California. Now, Catholic priests who were sent on a boat to fetch her determined that she'd have been alone for as long as 18 years and another last survivor of her tribe. But the details of her survival were never really fleshed out, because you died just a few weeks after being rescued.
Right, rescued in inverted commas, right? Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, they get used to living a certain way. I mean, what right is it of ours living in society to go, well, look, you know, we're going to rescue you. But maybe they don't want to be rescued. And I wonder if these people are more in touch with the spiritual side of nature and those sort of things as well.
They've said while they've investigated his area, they've found like spiritual kind of carvings on the trees, and which shows that he does have some sort of, you know, spiritual beliefs, which is probably what's keeping him going. I mean,
of course,
he's the last guy out there. He's completely solitary. No one else to talk to, apart from the jungle spirits. How is he not going insane?
Well, he obviously wouldn't know modern language, you would think. If he hasn't had any contact, I don't think he'd be speaking any languages. So these strange people coming in, speaking this strange language, and they're just expecting him to come out. So I'm really pleased that they've sort of backed off and said he can have this parcel of land, he can live there for however.
And they're saying that the story surrounding him, as more people know about it, it actually protects him more and more.
Right, so they're not going to go in with guns and try and get rid of him.
Yeah, and this is what would happen. And they say it still goes on today. There's still that motivation to get natives off the land so that you can claim it and you know, use the land as your own.
But it actually says in the article, the whole reason why the Brazilian government has rescinded these laws is because apparently a lot of this land, which was torn down, hasn't even been developed. It's just a barren wasteland.
Yeah. Yeah, like, the trees have been cleared and then it's not being used. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's horrible. So I certainly hope that it doesn't get mowed down, and I certainly hope that more people do find out about this, because he deserves just to be left alone. You really wouldn't have any cares though, would you? I mean, you wouldn't be concerned about aliens coming to attack or
maybe he's the happiest man on the planet.
I could imagine so.
Maybe that's the secret to happiness.
Is total isolation.
Just complete isolation.
Great. That's really great. If you were trapped like that, I mean, imagine being left somewhere in that case of that woman being alone for 18 years, do you think we'd be able to adapt as humans? Because we are social creatures.
You'd just start talking to your soccer ball.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That would be quite bad.
On our last Plus show, we covered a new UFO video that appeared from James Gilliland and the eSETI organization. They were claiming in the audio that it was one of the most impressive UFO videos in the last decade. And we thought it was a bug.
We kind of scoffed. It can't be anything like that. Yeah, we're kind of a little bit arrogant about it, weren't we?
Well, yeah, maybe we did jump the gun, because there's a thread on AboveTopSecret.com speaking about that video. And most of the people in the forum agreed with us. They said, well, yeah, it looks like some sort of an insect or something along those lines. Someone in that thread actually linked to another video from eSETI, which made us both stand up and pay attention.
Well, it took a double take, that's for sure.
Yeah. The first thing you'll notice, and we need to play the audio for this, is the reaction from the people observing this event. Let's take a listen.
Now, is that changing directions?
Yeah, it has like three times.
Oh, there it goes. Wait. It's still pulsing. Come on. Light her up. Whoa. Almost.
That's just hilarious.
Come on.
Oh, it's curving again.
It is.
So this is out on the Gilliland Ranch, where eSETI holds their collective viewing events, whatever they call it.
Right.
And they claim that on these couple of nights, that this was over a period of 3 or 4 weeks, that 25 to 40 ships were showing up every single night. Look, and you heard the reaction there. These people clearly think that they're seeing something fantastic in the sky.
Yeah, well, I mean, I had a look at the footage and I don't know what it is. I really don't know. I mean, they're pointing a laser pointer at something. And all I could think was, God, I hope that's not like a human aircraft, because they're blinding some poor pilot up there.
Well, they're moving lights in the sky. And the first thing you think is, okay, that's clearly a satellite. They're looking at satellites and getting excited. But when they point the laser pointers at the lights,
they brighten.
They're throbbing. They're brightening up.
And they move in other directions. So they're going in one direction and then all of a sudden they move in another direction.
Yeah,
satellites don't do that.
Multiple objects going in different directions. So I'm wondering if maybe we jumped the gun on that last video. Maybe there was something to that.
Look, I don't know. The one thing I was possibly thinking here was that they've got a glass sheet and they're actually filming through a glass sheet. But then again, the fact that the laser, you can actually see how far the laser is going. It makes you think, well, that's not possible either. So, I really don't know what's going on here. It's really unusual.
And again, the reaction from the crowd is convincing. These don't sound like actors. They clearly do believe what they're seeing is some form of extraterrestrial craft.
Well, they're even making jokes about it. So, it shows that they're so relaxed about it.
Like egging it on and then you hear them cheering. Let's take another listen towards the end, how excited they get.
Oh, wow!
Okay, so maybe not that excited, right?
I couldn't help myself. Yeah, I had to mix it
in. Yeah, I could see the sinister look in your eye.
I had to mix it in. But yeah, take a look at the video. We're interested to see what you think of this.
Mm.
And, you know, I am intrigued by the footage they're getting, but then I go to their website and it's like back downhill again.
Yeah.
Because they're charging for these ambassador training centers.
Oh, you say that so well, Ben.
Where you go in and you learn to welcome our ET brothers. I mean, that kind of stuff puts me off immediately, especially when they're charging a lot of money for
All I get is this image of from, what was it, that movie Independence Day of, oh, welcome aliens, and then they get blown away.
Yeah, right. I mean, if you can put all that aside, maybe they are grabbing some really good footage here. Again, the other thing that you mentioned, of course, is if this is military craft flying around and they're shooting high-powered lasers at it.
Well, they're illegal in our state because that's what people were doing to planes. They were pointing lasers at planes. And if there's some poor military guy there, even if it's a UAV, and there's some guy going, oh, what is going on here?
He's off in a bunker somewhere flying it with his joystick. He's like, oh, here we go.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's certainly different footage. So I recommend you log onto the show notes at mysteriousuniverse.org, have a look, and then email us or give us a call and let us know what you think. Now, as we discussed in the week's episode of Mysterious Universe, Ben, I said that I picked up the book Outbreak, the Encyclopedia of Extraordinary Social Behaviour. It's written by Hilary Evans and Robert Bartholomew. Now, I've only had a chance to sort of go over a little bit of this, but there's some really fascinating encounters in here.
It's a huge book.
It's really huge, and like the writing's tiny, so they've managed to shove a lot of encounters in here. But I just want to go over a few of them, and I'm actually going to have a really good read of this, and later on I'll bring more to our Plus members. But this one just goes to show you what people could actually get carried away with, and it really fascinates me. This one is called Incense Hysteria, and it occurred in the United Arab Emirates in 1994, and it says that on November the 13th, a fire was reported to have broken out in the female student dormitories at the United Arab Emirates University. As emergency personnel arrived, it was believed that toxic material was involved, as 23 teenage students had become ill and were rushed to two nearby hospitals. Their symptoms included chest pressure, difficulties breathing, dizziness, shaking, screaming, and crying. Some were coughing and complained of sore throats. Blood tests and physical exams revealed nothing unusual and the symptoms were quickly resolved. Upon further investigation of the premises, it was realized that the suspected toxic fire was actually a student burning harmless incense.
That's it.
That's it.
Incense. And it was toxic gas.
It was toxic gas. And 23 students carried on that they were dying. So that's one of the more sort of simple ones.
Right.
But there's a little bit more paranormal ones here. This one is called the India ET Scare and Riot. And it occurred in India in August of 2002. It says one man was killed and 12 injured after rioting erupted in northern India during a scare involving a purported extraterrestrial spaceship terrorizing residents. Now, violence broke out in the state of Uttar Pradesh when hundreds of frightened villagers stormed the police station, angry with police for not providing sufficient protection from the aliens. The attack on the police station followed seven mysterious deaths in the region that were attributed to the mysterious aerial objects, which villagers claimed struck during the night by burning and or scratching its victims. Some locals had dubbed the phantom assailants Muchamar, which means face scratcher. Isn't that weird? Face scratcher? Why that?
A face scratcher.
But how do you die from face scratching? Now, it later turned out after an investigation that this actually just turned out to be a psychological effect which people were experiencing. And a lot of the instances of scratching was self-inflicted by panicked villagers. So they were getting each other excited and they were scratching their own faces, but that's where it was coming from. Now, interestingly enough, this isn't the first time that something like this has happened in regards to the paranormal. 3 years later, in 2005, waves of fear rippled through the city of New Delhi amid rumours that a witch was wandering the city and visiting homes, only to strike some occupants dead. The witch supposedly appeared as a hungry old woman who showed up at homes and asked for an onion. What does that sound like to you? Someone showing up at your home and asking for a strange object?
Black-eyed kid, yes. Of course. Yeah.
Upon receiving the onion, reports said that she took out a knife and cut the onion in two, whereupon blood squirted out from the vegetable. The person giving the onion then supposedly dropped dead on the spot from her black magic. Authorities reported that many natural deaths were being blamed on the witch. Especially hard hit was the outer suburb of Spagapore, where hundreds of homes were sporting freshly painted yellow and brown palm pictures, which were believed to ward off witches. Now, in recent years, there have been several incidences of suspected female witches being lynched in parts of eastern India for the fact that they're practicing black magic. Poor witches, Ben, they always get blamed for black magic.
That's because they practice black magic.
Oh, right.
You've got highlighted here the Phantom Zeppelin scare, and we've spoken about this recently. How
because
intriguing.
Of Jacques Vallée book.
Yeah, how intriguing that is. This was actually reported in New Zealand in July and September of 1909. I had no idea.
Close to home.
That these sightings were in New Zealand. Between July and September of 1909, thousands of people across New Zealand reported seeing German Zeppelins, reflecting a popular folk belief that Germany was conducting flyovers as a prelude to an imminent invasion. The sightings occurred during a tense time in New Zealand history that was dominated by widespread rumours that Germany was intent on invading the country. In reality, an invasion of this small, isolated country in the South Pacific would have been...
It served no purpose at all.
Impractical. And an invasion using Zeppelins would have been technologically impossible. Now, the year prior to the invasion scare, there was a heated debate in the UK as politicians and commenters questioned whether the Commonwealth had lost its lead as the world's unrivaled naval power. There was much speculation that German leaders might take advantage of England's newly perceived weakness by invading the motherland. At the same time, rapid aeronautical advancements, especially with German Zeppelins, led to fear that bomb-dropping dirigibles would invade England. Many New Zealanders naturally thought that their country would be the target given their rich supply of natural resources, gold, timber, sheep, wool, hides, forestry products and beef. Now onto the sightings. The sightings began on the night of July the 11th on the South Island when several people reported seeing the mysterious light possibly from a dirigible for half an hour. The light was bobbing in and out of view of the Wangaloa Hills. There were widespread rumours at the time that the German airship Seastern was off the South Island and set the airship free in order to conduct aerial reconnaissance flights. On July the 19th, the mysterious aerial light was reported 160 kilometres to the northeast. The most spectacular report occurred in broad daylight on July the 24th at Kelso, where nearly two dozen schoolchildren and a teacher said that they watched in amazement as a Zeppelin-style airship swooped low over the town. A local reporter described the incident as nothing short of dumbfounding. And they've got a newspaper report here, an excerpt from it, but also sketches from the schoolchildren. And it looks very similar to sketches we've seen of UFOs before.
It's about to say, it sounds like a cigar-shaped UFO to me.
Right. And this is when you got this book out, and I saw that they had sections of UFO hysteria. Yes, I'm sure there's cases of mass UFO hysteria, but I was also cautious that they might take perhaps a too skeptical approach in thinking that these cases are just seeing things that aren't there, when in fact they are UFO sightings.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, and these people in New Zealand had good reason to believe at that period of time that these were perhaps German airships, German Zeppelins.
But they weren't. They were UFOs.
Perhaps they were, you know, something a little bit more esoteric, so to speak.
Mm.
Speaking of New Zealand, my wife actually works with a guy. I don't know if I should be saying this on the show in case he doesn't want it to get out, but too late. She works with a guy who's from New Zealand, and he asked her one day, what does your husband do? He does this podcast called Mysterious Universe, and they're talking about it, and he said to her, oh, I've got some stories to tell him. And he started going into some of his childhood on this farm they had in New Zealand.
Mm.
And he said their family had flocks of sheep, but every couple of months they would turn up with mutilations.
Really?
Yeah, he said the anuses would be cut out like lasers, like laser extractions of parts of the sheep.
So a classic mutilation that we hear with cattle, right?
Yeah. And he also said one day he saw a cigar-shaped craft. So this account just made me think of that little conversation. That's just another example of, you know, someone who would
not normally be,
maybe never talk about that,
yeah,
until it just comes up in conversation. All of a sudden, they're an eyewitness to a cigar-shaped craft in the sky.
Oh, we have to get him on the show sometime or interview him.
Yeah, I've kind of been hinting at that. Maybe
oh, good.
If he's got some good stories to share. And she did share some other things. Apparently, he seemed to have some strange psychic behavior going on when he was younger. He said in the morning when he was brushing his teeth, there was a window behind the mirror where he was brushing his teeth, and he would get the sense that something red was falling behind him, like
something
behind
red.
The window. Yeah, something red would just quickly flash past the window. He'd turn around and there'd be nothing there. And the next morning he's brushing his teeth and bang, he gets the flash that there's something falling past him behind the window, something red.
Oh my God, it's a clown.
Maybe not. This went on for a couple of days, and eventually he was there again in the bathroom or something. I can't remember what it was. And he hears this crash and something red fall past the window. And it was his father had actually fallen off the roof. He was wearing like a big red jacket. And that actually happened that day. Sounds
like a premonition.
But he was having these strange...
That is weird.
Premonitions of this event that was going
to
happen.
But you see, to me, that also links back in. Often people that have these premonitions or have these types of psychic abilities are more likely inclined to see UFOs.
Right.
And I wonder if that's a case that's happening with him. But obviously, he's not encouraging it because he doesn't, you know, doesn't want to come out with much of it.
There were some really cool stories. Like, there was also an area which, according to Maori law, which are the natives, was a cursed place.
Right.
You couldn't go there because that's where the spirits lived. It was like a lake or something. And if you took water from it, you were offending the spirits. And I can't remember the full details of the story, but I think one day he ended up drinking from it and his father freaked out.
Really?
Like, what on earth are you doing? You can't take that water. You'll be cursed.
Quick, pay it back.
And apparently the next day he's like had a huge rash all over his skin and his father was like, that was for taking the fairy water.
Wow.
So there were some pretty cool stories.
We need
there.
To look up some of the Maori folklore because they've got really fascinating stories like the Australian indigenous culture does as well. We need to find some of that.
That's one area we haven't really looked at before. And we've done a little bit of the Australian Dreamtime culture and some of the rock paintings which look like ETs.
Yeah, I was actually watching a documentary with Bear Grylls, you know, the Man vs. Wild guy.
Yeah.
And he was dumped in Arnhem Land, which is up in the Northern Territory of Australia, which is a beautiful countryside. You wouldn't catch me there dead, though, because it's just there's snakes and saltwater crocodiles and everything up there. But he was going past all these paintings, and just all these locations just have all these most beautiful 40,000-year-old paintings. And we get, again, like that spaceman sort of thing going on.
Yeah, with the big black eyes and it looks like a helmet.
Now, Ben, in my youth, and probably misspent youth, I should call it, I certainly had done some silly things when I was drunk, but not get shot in the back of the head and not know about it for 5 years. We move over to AOLnews.com. Well, this has actually shown up everywhere. It's been reported that a German man was shot in the back of his head. However, he took 5 years to realise it. Police said Tuesday that the 35-year-old man was hit by a .22-caliber bullet in the western town of Herne as he was out in the street partying drunk on New Year's Eve 5 years ago. They say the man recalled receiving a blow to the head, but told them that he didn't seek medical assistance at the time. Now, fortunately for him, the bullet did not penetrate the skull, and police say the man only went to see a doctor recently when he felt a lump in the back of his head. An x-ray showed an object under the skin and doctors operated and found the projectile. Police say it must have been a stray bullet fired by a reveller in the celebration.
It must have been the right angle.
Yeah, it must have been the right distance as well. Just enough to pierce because, I mean, the back of your skull isn't that strong. For a .22 caliber bullet, I mean, that's pretty scary.
This is the start of a bunch of silly stories, folks.
Bear
with us. The next one I wanted to cut, but Aaron insisted.
This is hilarious. It's like, get a real phobia, get an addiction or something.
Banana-hating woman diagnosed with banana phobia. The 21-year-old children's worker suffers from banana phobia, an overwhelming fear of yellow fruit. Her name's Fran Dando. She's so scared of bananas that all it needs is a glimpse of one to make her shake, sweat profusely, and even vomit. She said this began when she was young. Her younger brother slid a banana peel in her bed before she went to bed, and she jumped in and felt it on her back, and since then, she's scared of bananas.
Out of all the things you'd be scared of, I guess it goes to show you that it's quite easy to indoctrinate fear at a young age, isn't it? The next one is quite interesting. It's the neuroscientist paralyzed by love. And no, it's not a trashy romance novel. Allegedly, an American neuroscientist has developed a rare condition that leaves him paralyzed when he feels the emotion of love.
This is terrible.
Poor guy. It's fascinating. I didn't know that the human body was capable of things like this. Now, this is by Nick Allen, and he says that his name's Matt Frecking. He's 39 years old and he's from Portland. He is left immobile if he even has a romantic thought or sees others showing displays of affection. So it's not only him.
If he watches a romantic movie, he just gets paralyzed.
Yeah, he says that he has a sudden weakening of the muscles, which renders him temporarily immobile. However, he's still aware of his surroundings and able to hear. But isn't that horrible? Like, you suddenly get rendered immobile and people are like, oh, here he goes again.
Yeah, the feeling that sparks the attack is love and being around his family.
So he can't love his family.
It just sends him into physical paralysis. I'm sure he loves his family, but he has to avoid any of those emotions. Yeah, warm, fuzzy feelings. He can't even put his arm around his wife of 13 years.
He passes out after looking at photos in his wedding album. I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh. I mean, this is horrible, but it's just so fascinating out of love.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And he said when he's putting his arm around his wife, he has to do it sitting down.
Right.
Because he knows there's a good chance that he's just going to flop over and be unconscious.
But even a trailer for a romantic film can set him off. Yeah. Isn't that a weird experience?
I loved how he dealt with it, though. I mean, what a Casanova. He says, attacks are also triggered by trailers of romantic films, as he said. But he tries to stave them off by thinking about scientific research.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. I guess scientific research is as far as from love as you can get.
I love that that's how he controls it. He's like, science.
I wonder if there's a way to cure this. It doesn't seem to be.
Yeah, you think about science.
Right.
Yeah, you think about science and you've got your lovely wife next to you and you just think, oh, she's just a bag of bones and blood vessels and
empirical equations.
Exactly.
Yes, no. Now, if you're in front of your computer, I strongly recommend you log on to the show notes at mysteriousuniverse.org and have a look for the vagina tree, which predicts winning lotto numbers.
What is this?
Okay, this is from tabloid...
Where did you find this from?
Tabloid Prodigy. Mm-hmm. And this is from their strange but true section. Allegedly, winning lotto numbers have been predicted in Thailand by a tree that resembles a vagina.
Now, they wrote that all in caps too. A vagina.
Yeah, that's
right. You have to yell it.
A vagina.
That's right.
But you've got to look at this photograph. This really does look like two legs and a vagina.
It's a very unfortunate tree.
Isn't it? According to reports, intrigued villagers in the northern province of Feio said that they saw 008 in the trunk of an obscene tree, and it turned out to be a hit who played the number in the lottery. Who goes along and sees a vagina in a tree and go, I can see some lotto numbers in that. I think I'll play it this weekend.
Smart people, Aaron. Smart, switched on people.
Now, despite the fact that widespread gossip of the hit numbers has piqued the curiosity of many, no further successful predictions have been reported. So, yes, as sexy stories go, Ben, this isn't that sexy. It's quite disturbing, actually.
You're banned from picking the last articles to finish off shows now.
Why me? You pick some of these.
I didn't pick any of these.
Oh, nice to blame me now.
You're banned. Let's have a vote.
No vote. No.
On the Last Plus show,
I don't like what you're doing with your hands.
On the Last Plus show, we asked Plus members to see if I can go to the eBay auction and purchase some spells for you. So I'm just wondering if there's been any changes in the chestal region for you.
You tell me. I don't know. I feel kind of...
I think we need to work on this, people. We need more spells cast.
Why not you?
Actually, someone emailed in, because on that, if you missed the Last Plus episode, there was a story where there was a Wiccan, a witch, selling spells on eBay. She claimed that if you buy a spell, she could give you larger breasts or she could...
Bigger booty.
Yeah, make lovers break up. It's just you could buy spells on eBay. And we were wondering why they had so much positive feedback. They had like hundreds of...
Thousands. It's almost 2,500,
really?
I think. Yeah.
Thought there's got to be some scam here. And then someone emailed us and actually found out that if you purchase any of their stuff, they say to you, you have to leave positive feedback or I won't cast the spell.
Oh, what a cheap, underhanded trick. Oh, it's that old saying, Ben, a fool and his money are easily parted.
So we're about to wrap up this episode. Do you have much planned for your weekend?
Not really. I just bought my new Woo Audio headphone amplifier, so I'm going to be making love to that all weekend.
Yeah, I posted a Twitter photo of it. Well, it's not an actual
not
photo
mine,
I took, but it's the same thing.
Oh, if you're into music, you've got to get one of these things. They're just incredible. They're not that expensive, and it's just beautiful because it uses tubes. I mean, how cool is that? That's like that whole Fallout retro future thing. So I'm going to be enjoying that.
I like how they light up.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
It does sound amazing, man.
Yeah, I'm really pleased with it. Yeah, it's really good. But actually, what I've been doing is I'm trying to plan out a special for the show. I'm not going to give any details out, but I'm trying to get together this special. So I've got to go and do some research. And it's not going to be a little while, but it's going to be pretty big if I can get it to come together. But I was actually down at Borders picking up a couple of books just so I could sort of start reading a little bit about it and working out what I'm going to do. And I was standing at the counter, and this girl comes up to me and she's like, oh, hi, how are you? I'm like, oh, yeah, good, you know. And she goes, oh, just a second, please. And then, like, I turned to the side, and here's this guy who looks like a homeless guy, right? He's all disheveled and, like, just a mess.
Right.
And she runs over to him, and he's, like, fiddling with his pants, like, trying to bring his fly down.
Oh, no.
And he's standing in front of all, like, these e-readers, and she's like, no, not here. And he turned around, and he's, like, smiling. He's like, oh, not here, not here. She's like, no, not here. You have to leave. And so he zips his fly back up and just walks out.
As soon as you said homeless guy, I'm like, there's going to be urinating involved in this story.
That's what I'm like, what is going on? I mean, has he actually gone in there previously and urinated over the e-readers or something?
He must have done it before if she recognized him
straight away. She ran so fast. I was just like, she must know something's going on. But how weird. So that was my weird moment for the day. What about you?
Yeah, I'm thinking of going to the movies. I might go and see Salt.
Oh,
yeah, the new Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, I love her. That's going to be really good.
And I need to finish StarCraft.
Right. Yeah, I haven't even started playing that yet. So that's the next thing for me. Yes.
Thanks for being Plus members. We appreciate your support. And we'll catch you again mid-next week for your regular MU.